ever since the great space race launched with Sputnik in 1957 and peaked with Neil Armstrong taking one giant leap for mankind in 1969, the human race has been obsessed with getting back to the moon, or getting there at all if you're one of those Kubrick soundstage theorist people. But anyway, whether just to be cool, or get some cracking green cheese, or even colonization, America, as well as other countries, are planning to get back to the lunar surface in the next 2 to 3 years. But here at the Podfix Network, we have unearthed the true reason behind these future missions. Because there are Amazon women on the moon. It was 1985 and Universal was hard at work shooting Amazon Women on the Moon, which then, although ready to go in 1986, was not released in theaters until September of 1987. Described as a spoof of low-budget 1950s science fiction movies, interspersed with various comedy sketches and fake commercials making fun of late-night television, this anthology includes segments directed by Joe Dante and John Landis, as well as stars like Arsenio Hall, Joe Pantoliano, and Michelle Pfeiffer, to name a few. Over the next few months, the Podfix Network will be revisiting the sketches and commercials segment by segment, from Mondo Kondo to Roast Your Loved One to Reckless Youth. Plus, we'll break down the spoof movie Amazon Women on the Moon woven throughout this anthology as well. So buckle into your cockpit seats, adjust your space helmets, and prepare for launch as the Podfix Network goes to the moon.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 1 of Podfix Goes to the Moon. I am KG, the chief lunar expedition officer. That's still CEO, so that works. Yeah, CEO, chief. No, that's never mind. Anyway, I'm here, and I have no better way to kick off a Podfix Network summer series or special limited series than to have the other VP, the executive VP, Chris DeVos. Hey, sir, how are you?
Hey-o, what's going on? I'm here.
Yeah?
It's raining here in Florida really bad, and I my lawn needed it, so that's good.
Well, I don't think we're ready to launch yet, so rain shouldn't delay anything. I'm assuming we're launching out of Florida when we head off to the moon.
Probably.
On our expedition, but we're gonna find these Amazon women one of these days. But we gotta get prepped. I mean, we have a rocket surgeon. Well, he's not. I guess not rocket surgeon. Yes, he's not a surgeon, but he knows something about rockets. So Vlad will be with us in the future. Toph, I'm just gonna say anybody who's on our network, more of me, the 80s years, they're all gonna be around. Yeah, we'll get just about everybody. I'll edit part of that out too.
Are you saying that Podfix has a rocket? Do we have a rocket? Because I haven't seen it. I would really like to at least like go inside of it before.
We're building it in Bob Haynes' backyard.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's starting slowly, and we're getting there.
I'll put a Podfix sticker on it so everybody knows it's ours.
We might need a few just to cover up holes. That'll work. Yeah. But we will be by the end of the summer. We should be ready to launch, heading in space. I do some cursory research as some other people like say, and I figured out that the fact that everybody wants to go back to the moon these days, it's because they have also learned that there are Amazon women on the moon. And I'm going to stick to that story from now until at least the end of summer when we finish up this, 10 to 12 part series.
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
Did you do any like research on this movie? Like I've never heard of it until you
okay,
said,
so
hey.
You had never heard of this movie.
No.
Okay. So, not only did I own this movie on DVD and I've had it for years. I watched this a ton when I was younger. I think it's something to do, I'm going to guess, with, like, you know, you're in Florida. I grew up in the Midwest. So in winters, when you're stuck inside for like 4 or 5 months at a time, I probably watched a lot more TV. My family was very early adopters of cable. So we had HBO very early on. And so that's where this one showed up a lot when I was probably like someplace between 12 and 13 years old. In next week's episode, we will be discussing the Pet House Video scene that I'm sure was something that made me sneak downstairs to watch, regardless of whether I got the humor or not.
I got it now. Mm-hmm. Like, I've heard of the Kentucky Fried movie. Well, it seems to be like in that same vein, at least a little snippet that you sent me. And I grew up in Ohio, so I did winters. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I forgot the armpit of America. I'm kidding. Good thing that you mentioned that, because this film was originally intended to be a direct sequel to Kentucky Fried Movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it was going to be called Kentucky Fried Sequel. However, John Landis, who directed all of Kentucky Fried Movie, along with Universal, could not get the rights to the original distributors of that film to agree to a deal. And so this is more of an homage to that than a direct sequel. And probably why, then John Landis probably didn't feel like he needed to direct each and every one of the skits that are in here. However, he did direct the one that we're doing this week. Each week, we are going to go through each of the segments. This movie was a combination of spoofs between late-night infomercials, late-night movies, other weird stuff. So we're going through it segment by segment here. Again, the movie is called Amazon Women on the Moon. Came out in 1987. I probably saw it sometime within that year when I was about 13, in the early days of cable, as I mentioned. As I've already said, John Landis, he directed Kentucky Fried Movie. He's also directed a ton of other classic movies that we're all very familiar with. American Werewolf in London, Blues Brothers, Clue. Those are ones that he also wrote, but also Animal House, Trading Places, Coming to America, which is where he, had a connection with Arsenio Hall, who stars in this first episode, in this first skit here that they do, called Mondo Kondo. So I am a little surprised. I think everybody that I've sent, hey, would you want to be in on this little short run series? Here's a clip. I don't think anybody has. I think Clay Groves so far is the only person who's like, oh yeah, I love that. And he picked out a couple skits he actually wanted to cover right off the bat. He's like, I want to do these two. I was like, okay, that works. Where most other people have been like, I've never heard of this, but I don't know why.
I'm on that same boat. Like, this would be a movie I would have definitely watched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's So you watched the skit that I sent you. Did you watch any? Did you look up any other ones on YouTube? Okay, we'll have a link, by the way, to a playlist in the show notes for anyone who wants to follow along. It'll be very useful for this one that we're doing, because this opening thing is not, there's not much talk going on.
No. And I was like, when I watched it, I'm going in blind, I'm like, is that Arsenio Hall?
Yes. Yeah. There are, as we go through the series, you're going to be amazed at all of the people that are associated with this here show. But as you mentioned, Arsenio Hall, he's best known for probably Coming to America. Also Coming to America 2, maybe, for the younger folks, Harlem Nights. And of course, he had a late night TV show, the Arsenio Hall Show, that was twice Emmy nominated.
The Dog Pound, baby.
Yeah. Now, I noticed in looking through some of his IMDb credits and looking for some trivia and stuff on him, a lot of the shows and movies that he's in, he is listed as Arsenio Hall, except for this short-lived 6-episode TV show called Arsenio, where he plays a guy named Michael Atwood, a broadcaster on an all-sports network all-sports-based network in Atlanta, and he gets to work with his wife, played by Vivica A. Fox.
Yeah, not familiar.
No, I'm not familiar with that. I am, though, familiar, I don't know if you are or not, that he put out an album under the name Chunky A. Album was called Large and In Charge. featured Paul Abdul, Will Wheaton, and Ice-T as some of the guests, but I had this on cassette, and he like wore a fat suit and rapped.
I want to say maybe I remember that and forgotten it.
I don't. I can't tell you what the I can't tell you what the song was that stood out or anything like that on it. But as a chunky young man growing up, yeah, I embraced stuff like that right away. Now, one other quick little thing that I learned was that in the cartoon that came out in 1986 called The Real Ghostbusters, he was the voice of Winston Zeddemore, beating out Ernie Hudson, who played Winston in the actual movies, the actual Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 movies. And he apparently was confused because he arrived at the audition and saw Hudson like was auditioning for the same role. I think that was just a very weird thing that they made him like come in and actually re-audition for, like, not only did Ernie Hudson have to come in and audition for that role, but then he got beat out by Arsenio Hall. I don't know.
He got gypped out of the whole Ghostbusters thing. That's just another kick in the crotch for him, you know?
Yeah, very, very much so. But yeah, I was trying to find a couple little things about any of the directors or actors who are in all of these. And that's one of the more interesting things that I learned about Arsenio. Because I already knew about the Chunky A thing. This skit is called Mondo Kondo. As I've mentioned, it's directed by John Landis. And apparently it didn't have a script at all.
Oh, really?
It's literally and completely improvised. He just basically called it a Looney Tunes cartoon where the guy comes home and the home kills him. And they just went from there. So obviously they had to go back and do some editing for some special effects and things like that.
Right.
But they just kind of rolled right with it.
You know, that makes me enjoy it a little bit more than I did.
Oh, okay. I laughed pretty good at a couple of these things. A couple of the slapsticky type things. But yeah, so I'm guessing. So when he walks into his apartment, they don't give him a name. It's just Arsenio. He walks into his apartment. I think he just got home from work. He's got a little suit on. Seems in really good spirits. He's humming a tune. And the phone rings. He answers it. It's the wrong number. So I'm guessing then that also means that he improvises. And I'm guessing they just kept going with it. Now, okay, I take this back. They couldn't have completely improvised this because there is something down the line that doesn't work if you're just improvising everything.
See, that whole phone call it's really out of place in that whole skit. So I can see that definitely being improvised 100%.
Yeah, because
it doesn't fit at all. It actually throws everything off a little bit.
Well, I think it's the fact that it's escalating throughout the thing. So it goes from him just being calm. He's like,
hello. No, you got the wrong number. Yeah, but ain't no Thelma here, man.
And he's just fine with it. But there's a scene with a bookcase that we'll get to that you can't improvise the way that they set some of the stuff up. So I don't know. Maybe most of it's improvised. I don't know. But that's now that I think about it. But as I mentioned, he comes in. He's in good spirits. And again, folks, you can watch right along with if you go and check out the link in the show notes. For Mondo Kondo, but he comes in, he sets down his briefcase, he goes into the kitchen, opens up the fridge, he's grabbing a beer, grabs a little sandwich, opens up the beer, it just explodes like a fire hose in his face. Like, there's more than any beer could have been in that can.
Just, I don't know, have you ever shaken up a beer and had it explode? It seems to go on forever.
It seemed like an extraordinary amount in the time that he was just kind of holding it there in front of himself.
It was probably an IPA.
and he's very soaked. But then like 2 minutes later, he's dried off perfectly again.
Yeah, that's like that it community doesn't even, department letting you down again.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's the costume department that had a perfectly second suit ready to go. Automatically. Yeah. Because he just kind of wipes his head down, and next thing you know, he's right back in there. And that's the thing. It's not that he wiped his head down so he dried off that. Like, there's no stains or anything on the shirt at all. And then he's like, fine, whatever. And he head grabs a sandwich. He takes a bite of it. It's either just a nasty tasting one or it's rotten, maybe?
I did not understand what was wrong with the sandwich.
Something, but it doesn't taste good to him. And he spits the one bite into the sink. And I can get that because he's standing right next to the sink. But then he turns around and he like spikes the rest of the sandwich like a football into the sink. I'm like, wouldn't you throw that out as opposed to like tossing a full sandwich into what it will eventually we know is the garbage disposal? I mean, that's a big chunk to throw into a garbage disposal.
for some reason, the way he was eating it made me think it was frozen for some reason. I don't know. That just could be me being weird. So I have no idea.
My picture is just like, you know, maybe like the ham that was on it went bad the night before. And so it's got like that slime that you get on, like, that's how you know, like ham or turkey or something, cold cuts are bad. They get that slime on them.
Yeah.
They just
egg salad sandwich or something.
Well, those are delicious. anyway, so he throws this into the, he crazily throws it into the sink. There's garbage disposal in the sink. He leans over to turn on the garbage disposal, forgets he's got a tie hanging there. It gets caught into the disposal, yanking him down, pulling it very tightly around his neck, basically about to choke him out. He is frantically reaching for the switch to turn it back off. I think his fingers seem like they extend a bit because he's not even close the first time.
Yeah.
And he gets there. He gets loose. Half his tie is gone. And then he kind of starts, you know, he's walking. He's trying to catch his breath again. The phone rings again. It's that same person calling, same wrong number. He's like,
"That ain't no Thelma here."
Oh, man.
Still out of place.
Yeah. He hangs it up. And then, I don't know. Okay, so things aren't going right. But look, I just got home from work. I like to sit down. I like to watch a little TV when I get home. Watch TV before I start work, too. Who knows? But he grabs, he's like, I'm going to watch some, he's going to watch a movie on the old VCR. For you younger listeners, that's a thing before Blu-ray and streaming and DVDs, where you had these little tapes that you had to put into a machine. A lot of times it didn't work, especially if you didn't have it plugged in. Right. And so he tries to get it to work, and he looks over.
They're big tapes.
Yeah, very big. Yeah.
Not little.
No, not like not like cassette tapes. These big thick tapes. And so he notices right away it's not plugged in. Not like my mom, who made us replace an entire DVD player because she didn't realize it wasn't plugged in. Yeah, she claimed that she checked everything on, it just wasn't working. And then when we went to replace the other one, we noticed and just simply plugged it in and pressed the button and it opened right up.
Oh, God.
Different story for a different day. Now, he goes to plug it in, massive electric shock, and we get this fun, like, cut for just a quick second where his hair is just, like, completely puffed out.
Right.
With the electric shock, just for a quick second, and boom, it's right back. And he's, again, like, oh, geez. He's, you know, there's a little smoke going on. But he regains his composure really, really good, and he's like, all right, fine. I'm still going to go with this videotape. Pushes it in, presses play, and it guns right back out at him. Clocks him right across the forehead, kind of like a hockey puck right to the head, and just lays him out for a second. And I'll be honest, I laughed at each one of these things. The increasing physical damage that happens to him throughout the entire thing keeps making me laugh more and more.
As much, but it was very Looney Tuney, like you said before. It plays like a live action Looney Tunes. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to picture it in your head, and you've seen the Twilight Zone that John Landis did, the movie and mm-hmm. his part, it plays, this whole thing plays, all those special effects plays exactly like this little skit.
Is that the one where like the machines are coming to life trying to kill the guy?
I think it's the one where the little boy kind of is in charge of everything and you don't want to make him angry.
Okay. Because they did say there is one, I think they said there is one clip from, I thought they said it was from the Twilight Zone movie, that it's a thing where like all the machines are trying to kill the guy, and this is kind of like a spoofy homage to that of some sort. But also, like, again, as far as like a Looney Tunes thing, like whatever happens to him, like if that thing hits you, you're going to be laid out for a bit. You're probably going to get some ice. Instead, he just kind of gets up. He's like, fine, whatever. Watching that. Goes, sits on the couch. He adjusts his pillow, puts his feet up. I like that he pulls the newspaper over so he doesn't get dirt all over the table from his shoes they still got on. Puts on, points the remote at the TV, and boom. It explodes everywhere. And we can see at this point, there's a look on his face. Like he's like, I'm not surprised. Like, okay, I get it. That's what happens.
He's just giving up now.
Yeah, he like casually brushes it off, gets up. He's simply ignoring those charred remains that are in front of him. He walks over to the bookcase and grabs a magazine hanging off it. Now, apparently, that's the only thing keeping it balanced as well, is this magazine.
Yeah, this is the one gag I think they could have done a little bit better on. I mean, a book. You pull a book out of a bookcase, that that could make it fall over. But the little magazine, that was kind of disappointing.
Well, and this is also the one where you can't tell me it's completely improvised. In the little trivia notes I found out, because not only does this like whole bookcase fall on top of him, but when the phone starts ringing again, he busts out of basically something that's cut perfectly out to look that's in like the shape of his body.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And that part and so, I did like. And so, you can't improvise like unless they let it fall and then like, okay, now go cut the thing out where he's at and he'll pop out. But I doubt they could have done that as well. The rules of three, the phone rings again. This time, though, he is not having it. It's the wrong number. And we get...
What? Ain't no f***ing Thelma here, man! Look, the b***hs don't live here! F*** you, too!
Then he slams down the receiver. He's so pissed. But he smashes his own finger. That causes him to step into the waste paper basket that's right next to the desk where he's at. Stumbles backwards, falling out the window, and we assume to his death. And just to kind of, like, you know, the little button on the whole thing is there's a guy at the bottom. He's sweeping up things. And despite all the glass and a human falling to the ground right in front of him, he's kind of looks up and holds out his hand like, oh, is it rain.
And I feel I've seen that in many a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yeah. It's
the guy, the unaware guy. He just keeps sweeping. Doesn't matter what's going on around him.
The guy's obviously not blind, but, I mean, it's like right in front of him. He's not even looking the wrong direction either.
Yeah, he's in
everything falls right there, but he's just like, right?
Yeah. I gotta finish sweeping. I don't have time for this.
Mm-hmm. So that's the big opening skit, and it gets you, especially like if you're watching this now, and you recognize more of these people that are in this now, because a lot of the people that we're gonna talk about, they were very early in their careers when they did this. So this is still very early in Arsenio's career. So now when you see it, you're like, oh, I know that guy. And there's a lot of fun to this. I like how it continues to escalate up. I think the electric shock thing is probably the best part of the whole thing. Because that's kind of the point where it's like he goes from being like, you know, he's only got almost to the point where he's like, all right, whatever happens is going to happen now.
What I think is even more impressive now that you tell me it's improv is the fact that this is a 4-minute skit, and these gags are back to back to back to back nonstop. There's no dead time in this skit. Every little thing that happens to him is right on top of something else.
Yeah, I mean, and they probably had to do like the majority of it. Yeah, probably is improvised. It probably goes right along with it. They had to have had somebody like set to like make the tape shoot out at him though.
Yeah, well,
or could there have been multiple things that happened based on that? And then, like, obviously, like, if he improvises getting shocked by plugging it in, then they're like, all right, let's retake it one time. All right, we're going to make it so your hair sticks up, and then, boom, we'll cut back in.
What I'm thinking is that here's in my mind how it plays out improvised, and then you add the effects in later. He'd be like, okay, now I'm going to the VCR. I'm going to press the button, and then tape's gonna shoot out at me, you know, like they improvise walking through it and then put it all together after that. That's how I would picture it.
That might be it. Like they walk through it one time of like just okay, Arsenio, what, like, go from like one thing to another, what do you think is gonna happen here? Start by walking in and go to the fridge, and then it's a choose your own adventure from there. And so he probably walked through the whole thing.
Right.
He comes up with the phone ringing and everything like that, and then eventually getting to the point where he falls out and falls to his death and everything like that. And I did laugh at each of like the little issues getting bigger and bigger as they went along. And I fully remember him always yelling at the person on the phone.
I also picture the people who wrote the play that doesn't go right. They watched this movie, at least this opening scene. Because it reminds me of that as well.
I don't think I've seen that one.
It's the same shtick, but for a whole play.
I heard about that recently too, and I don't know where I heard about that.
I think they're gonna make it into a movie, like they do everything.
Yeah, but that sounds. You know what? I'm gonna look it up, and while I do that, folks, we're gonna take a quick commercial break, and then we're gonna come back for a commercial break.
This is the Irrationally Exuberant. I'm Reed Messerschmidt.
Family, friends, fans, Bono, I see you over there.
Looks like a carelessly basted turkey with the head still on, but the head got stung by a bee and it's allergic to bees.
Johnny, are you awake, Johnny?
Yes, Bigfoot. I was just smelling your arm fur and thinking about how much I love you. I love you more than that old moon and his bright little friends.
The story of the time I found myself in front of the frying pan at 3 a.m, drunk, of course, wearing a bloodstained suit and a backpack full of potatoes. This is the story of the time a grizzled old hobo asked me if I was okay. The Irrationally Exuberant is a podcast, but also art. Find it at theirrationallyexuberant.com, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Iceberg Slim and bees and Roy Orbison. What could these things possibly have in common?
And we're back. We've moved from kind of the training grounds for our launch. We still haven't got over to Bob's house to look at the rocket yet, but
I'm excited.
Yeah, no. Right now though, we're gonna get Chris fitted for his spacesuit. And while we do that, we're gonna take a look at one other of the sketches from Amazon Women on the Moon. One of the things that they did in between some of the bigger sketches is they would throw in basically a fake commercial. I love fake commercials. Put a lot of them into the shows that I've done. This one is entitled Hair Looming. It stars Joe Pantoliano.
I was gonna ask, was that Joey Pants?
Yeah. He is playing Cy Swerlow. It's a parody of hair replacement ads. At about this time, like Joey Pants, he hasn't done a whole lot of stuff, mostly TV. He's like an Eddie in the Cruisers and Risky Business leading this. But he's also he plays one of the Fratelli brothers in The Goonies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's like the earliest thing I remember him in. And then while
he did. Yeah.
And while he's been in a ton of different TV shows and films since then, he's probably best remembered for his Emmy-winning performance on The Sopranos, where he has the one line out of The Sopranos that I remember probably more than any other, and it's he's trimming his toenails, and the lady that he's seeing at the time, she's there, but when he clips his toenails, I guess like part of it shoots up and hits her. And she's like, oh, what the hell? He's like, oh, shrapnel. and it makes me laugh all the time. Every time I saw him, because my wife and I were recently rewatching The Sopranos, and every episode I was like, oh, is this where he does the shrapnel thing? And he had not gotten to it in the last season that we had watched. So we have to get back into that.
I never really got into The Sopranos. I realized that I'm probably the only one in the world who didn't really take to The Sopranos. I watched the first season and I didn't go back to it. But I remember Joey Pants from The Matrix. That's the big movie for me. I remember.
Yep. That was the other thing I was going to say. People remember him as Cypher in The Matrix, or his recurring role as Captain Howard in the Bad Boys franchise. A little thing that I learned about him. He has appeared in 4 films that have been selected to the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. That'd be The Goonies, La Bamba, The Matrix, and he's also in Memento.
Oh, okay. And this movie. This one was picked, right?
This was probably next on the list. They probably were getting ready to put this one in. It still should get there at some point in time. Now, I mentioned this is a parody of hair replacement ads that would be on TV late at night back in the day. It opens with a black and white picture of a very bald Joey Pants, a.k.a. Cy Swerlow. I just noticed in my notes I spelled bald not the same way that it should be spelled for this. Anyway.
You didn't have to admit that.
Yeah, well, I did because I just saw it now. Anyway, he is he's talking about how miserable his life was.
This used to be me. Old before my years, ignored by women, passed over for promotions. But now, all that has changed.
What doesn't change is his tone of voice throughout the entire thing. Yeah. And they pull away the photo, and we now see Cy, and he has a full head of carpet.
Carpet, yeah.
Yeah. Cy Swerlow apparently invented the technique called hair looming. We know this because he told us while obviously reading off cue cards to the side. I love it. He's just, his eyes keep looking over to the side, very monotone. You can tell he's reading every little bit off to the side, and it's great. He explains his technicians will visit you in your home, so be no embarrassment by people seeing you getting your bald head covered up and fixed, and it cuts from there. The hair looming truck, people are still going to know.
Right, yeah.
That things are going
everywhere.
It's a giant truck, hair looming in nice cursive on the side. They are wheeling in a whole bunch of equipment, and that's because, you know, the techs will come over. They show us a potential customer. They're out in front of their house. Cut to inside. They're showing this guy over 2,000 carpet samples in all sorts of colors and all sorts of styles of carpets, like shag carpet. Well, that's the only in regular carpet. I don't know what other types of carpet there are.
Carpet swatches. This commercial was so subtle in its humor. I really enjoyed this bit better than the first one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it looks like an Empire Carpet commercial.
Exactly, yeah.
Then they measure his head. They cut out some sections of the carpet, and they start stapling it to his head. And he's sitting there just kind of like, flipping through some other stuff and like, I don't know, reading the newspaper or something. And you see him kind of grimace a little bit with each like little.
Right.
But not too much. And then Cy comes on back talking to us. He goes,
"You can sleep in it."
We see this customer. He's now fully loomed. Lovely head of carpet. He is laying in a bed next to a much younger woman that we are assuming that he got because he now has he's got the hair loom going on.
Fully loomed is how everyone should live their life.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's my motto all the time. And as he's sleeping, she's kind of running her fingers through the nice carpeted head. Like, she's just really into the fact that he has it, because he's got like a very shag carpet choice that he picked out. And then Cy tells us,
"You can shower in it."
Cut to the customer. He is shampooing his carpeted hair, which is now a completely different color than it was while laying in bed previously. I don't know how that works. Do you have to pop the probably staples out? And I don't even want to know how that works. If you want to change the color.
No, he's just showering it on his head, right?
Well, yeah, but once he dries off and uses a dustbuster vacuum to clean his head a little bit, it's not the same color. It's like a darker shade than what he had laying in the bed. Oh, so maybe
I was wondering if the dustbuster is around at the time, because they, I think it would have been funnier if they just dust busted his head.
Oh, yeah. Dustbusters existed at that time. That's definitely of that time.
I'm not up on my dustbuster timeline.
Our very young audience that listens, a dustbuster was a handheld vacuum back in the day. Charge up, and then you could just vacuum up little spills and little things like that. And then apparently in this case, you could, you know, vacuum your hair to make sure it wasn't a lot of dust or anything.
There's still dustbusters around today. I have one for my car.
Wow, look at that. Did not know that they still existed.
Yeah, they still exist.
Amazing. Of all the things. Cy closes by telling us if it can change his life, it can change ours. He's got a big smile on his face as a young woman comes over, kisses his head, and then rubs all over his nice little carpeted locks. And then it comes up and says, call 1-800-GET-HAIR. Hair looming P.O. Box 3830 Palm Springs, California 92263. Money back guarantee. What's that guarantee? Like that you're going to get ladies with this?
I don't know. What happens if you don't like it?
Yeah, I mean, and how, like, what if I want to change my hairstyle? What if I'm not, like, what if for a while I'm a shag carpet type of guy and I want to switch? What if I want to make sure that maybe I have a goatee? Or even other areas of hair that matches what's on my head. I don't know if I would
drape scenario?
Yeah. What if I want to make sure that everything seems all natural, that it's, you know, that everything is the same? But mostly, I think mostly just especially for the head, like if I don't like the orange shag carpeting after like a year, can I switch it up for something a little more conservative? I don't know. No.
This was also a quick one. I mean, it jumps in and it jumps out, but you got to watch this one a couple times because there's so many subtle things. I think the more you watch this fake commercial and the more things you pick up, the funnier it gets.
Mm-hmm.
Like with trucking all outside the house, there's enough people to actually, it's like a two-story house, and they brought enough people to actually re-carpet that house for their subtle nobody would know.
Oh yeah, and it's not like it's even it's not like an inconspicuous truck either. It's a giant truck with hair looming written right on the side.
Everyone's wearing full body. I don't know.
Almost like the painter's suit. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The painting suit type things. Like, you know, it looks like a carpet company basically is coming in, but they're just looking to put stuff on your head.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing. So we have the sketches like Mondo Kondo coming up through all these things. We'll have little commercials like hair looming. And then there's some segments of an actual movie called Amazon Women on the Moon that are going to be included as well in our entire segment and series that we go over here for the entire summer. Chris, I'm glad you could start off because I know you're picky about your clothes, so we want to get enough time to get your space suit perfectly ready. Maybe we'll have you back again to you know, try it on again, make sure everything's nice and comfy cozy, so that you'll be ready when it's launch time at the end of this whole thing.
I had requested heated massage seats for the Rocket. Mm. So I'm hoping we're not ignoring that, or you don't come to me and go, they didn't make the budget, because that's
we're still working out the budget. Don't worry about it.
Okay. I mean, we got some big coffers here at PodFix. We should be able to get massage seats or sheets or both. Sheets both. On the massage.
Massage sheets. That's an interesting thing. Huh. I get a little weird at night. Trying to go to bed, since they start rubbing all over you. That's.
I could easily fall asleep to that, I think.
Yeah. Or it'd be it'd be creepier to wake up to it, that's for sure. What the hell? Who's grabbing me?
Right.
Yeah. I'm good. Jeez. Your sheet knows that you're about to get a Charlie horse that starts rubbing at your leg. Like, okay, ease up. We're good. Yeah. Anything in particular that you want to plug for the network?
Check me out on the PodFix Presents channel. It's a channel where you can catch classic PodFix shows. You can catch new shows like this one. Experimental shows that myself or other members of the network might put up. It's something different all the time. It's worth putting in your podcatcher.
Two Drunk Milfs and Gen Z, right? That's on there. That's on
original
there.
Shows on there too.
Yeah, and we'll be having them on in a future episode.
Good luck to that.
Well, I said it now, and I'm actually gonna. It's gonna be in this broadcast, so they're gonna have to do it then.
They'll do it, but get them to stay on topic. That's, you're gonna have to get a chair and a whip.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll borrow some from you then, because obviously you're experienced with it.
I want none of that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll help only because it's you, Keith. But otherwise, I'd be like, nope.
Yeah. I can't do two things at once. So you either have to hold the whip or the chair. Probably the whip. I'll sit in the chair. We'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, folks, come back next week. We are going to be checking out a spoof of Penthouse Playboy videos called Pet House, and also Murray in Videoland with our friend Vlado from It's Not Rocket Surgery, as we continue to get ourselves prepared to go to the moon, find ourselves some Amazon women. Until then, Chris, thank you.
Thank you,
audience. Dude. Thank you. I heard you back as well. Thank you. What?
Ain't no fucking Thelma here, man!
Podfix Goes to the Moon is a Podfix Presents exclusive series. Episodes are hosted by me, Keith Gawler, recorded, mixed, and edited, yes, that's right, edited, at the Pop-Up Filmcast Studios. This episode was executive produced by Chris DeFoss. Check out Chris on shows such as Podcast 42 and the Super True Crime Podcast, which is exclusive here on Podfix Presents. Music for this episode was curated from the Free Music Archive and features Alex Productions' motivational cinematic corporate movie and Rocket Adventure by Serge Quadro. Keep up with Podfix Network by following on social media at Podfix on Twitter, at official_Podfix on Instagram. Join the Podfix Nation on Facebook. Subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, check out all the details on the network and its shows at www.podfixnetwork.com.